Good morning and welcome to Talking Information Center News. I'm Michelle Balcony. Today is Friday, April 10th, 2026, and we're going to be reading the latest headlines from Newsmax. President Trump warns Iran against charging Hormuz shipping tolls. President Donald Trump on Thursday warned Iran against charging tolls on ships transiting the Strait of Hormuz, a choke point through which 20% of the world's oil supply passes. Hamid Hosseini, a spokesperson for Iran's Oil, Gas, and Petrochemical Products Exporters Union, which works with the Iranian government, told the London Financial Times Wednesday of this week that Iran would require ships passing through the strait to pay the cryptocurrency equivalent of $1 per barrel of oil on board during a two-week ceasefire with the United States. There are reports that Iran is charging fees to tankers going through the Hormuz Strait. They better not, and if they are, they better stop now, Trump wrote last night on his Truth Social. Trump's post came a day after he suggested working with Iran to charge tolls on ships passing through the strait. He told ABC News Wednesday that the U.S. and Iran are thinking of doing it as a joint venture, as a way of securing it, also securing it from lots of other people. It's a beautiful thing. Trump also addressed tolls Monday during a White House press briefing. He was asked whether he would be okay with Iran charging tolls to end the conflict. "What about us charging tolls?" Trump said. "I'd rather do that than let them have it, right? Why shouldn't we? We're the winner." Any suggestion of a joint U.S.-Iran venture to charge tolls drew pushback Thursday from the European Commission and the United States Shipping Agency. International law provides for the freedom of navigation, which means what? It means no payment or toll whatsoever, a European Commission spokesperson told Euronews. The Strait of Hormuz, like any other maritime lane, is a public good for all of humanity, which means navigation must be free. Freedom of navigation must be restored. A spokesperson for the UN's International Maritime Organization told Reuters that imposing a toll on ships sailing through the strait would set a dangerous precedent. "There is no international agreement where tolls can be introduced for transiting international straits," the spokesperson said. The UN Convention on the Law of the Sea outlines rules governing straits used for international navigation. Although the U.S. and Iran signed the treaty, neither has ratified it, and Iran has long rejected key provisions governing transit through international straits. According to UNCLOS, ships enjoy the right of transit passage through international straits, the spokesperson said. "States bordering straits shall not hamper that right nor suspend the transit passage." Meanwhile, oil company executives reached out to the White House, Secretary of State Marco Rubio, and Vice President J.D. Vance to protest Iran charging tolls in the strait as a condition of peace talks, Politico reported Wednesday. Oil industry representatives met with senior State Department staff Wednesday morning to raise concerns, one attendee told Politico. They said conceding to Iran's request would add $2.5 million in tolls and higher insurance costs to each shipment, expenses likely passed on to consumers. Giving Iran control of the strait could set a precedent for countries such as Singapore and Turkey to impose tolls on key trade routes, including the Straits of Mallorca, Bosporus. Paying such tolls could also expose companies to legal risk for violating sanctions on Iranian officials. White House Press Secretary Caroline Levitt said during Wednesday's briefing this week that the issue of the U.S. generating revenue from the Strait is an idea the president has floated, as you know, and it's something that will continue to be discussed over the course of the next 2 weeks. But the immediate priority of the president is the reopening of the Strait without any limitations, whether in the form of tolls or otherwise, she stated. President Trump says Iran is doing a poor job of letting oil through Hormuz. President Donald Trump said Thursday of this week, and he accused Iran of doing a very poor job of allowing oil through the Strait of Hormuz and breaching the terms of their two-week ceasefire agreement. In a barrage of social media posts that sparked fresh fears for the shaky truce, Trump also warned Iran against imposing a toll for ships passing through the crucial waterway. Iran is doing a very poor job, a dishonorable, some would say, of allowing oil to go through the Strait, Trump said on his True Social platform. That is not the agreement we have, exclamation point, the president posted. Iran and the United States said the 167-kilometer, 104-mile Strait between the Gulf and the Indian Oceans would reopen after the two-week truce was announced Tuesday. But just 10 vessels have passed through since the Middle East war ceasefire took effect, according to maritime tracking data. Tensions have risen further after Iran suggested imposing a toll on ships, though Trump has made similar suggestions and even aired joint tolls with Tehran. There are reports that Iran is charging fees to tankers going through the Hormuz Strait. They better not be, and if they are, they better stop now, Trump said in an earlier True Social message. In another post in which the president raged at a critical media editorial on the ceasefire, Trump added that very quickly you will see oil start flowing with or without the help of Iran. The U.S. leader's tone appeared to darken noticeably from earlier comments to NBC News in which he said he was very optimistic about a peace deal with Iran after their ceasefire, and that Israel was scaling back strikes on Lebanon. President Trump told the broadcaster in a telephone interview that Iran's leaders were much more reasonable in private, but added, if they don't make a deal, it's going to be very painful. Vice President J.D. Vance is due to hold talks with Iran in Pakistan Saturday. Special Envoy Steve Witkoff and Trump's son-in-law Jared Kushner are also traveling to Islamabad. The president is optimistic that a deal can be reached that can lead to lasting peace in the Middle East, White House Principal Deputy Press Secretary Anna Kelly told the Associated Foreign Press in a statement Thursday. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu had, meanwhile, agreed in a call with Trump Wednesday of this week to low-key it, quote, with Lebanon after devastating strikes, the U.S. president said. Israel and Lebanon will hold talks in Washington next week, a State Department official said Thursday. Israel's heaviest strikes on Lebanon since Hezbollah entered the Middle East war in early March killed hundreds on Wednesday, rattling the uneasy truce between Washington and Tehran less than 48 hours after it came into force. As reported by the Associated Foreign Press. President Trump rips Tucker Carlson, Candace Owens, and Megyn Kelly, and calls them nut jobs. President Donald Trump on Thursday, yesterday, lashed out at multiple well-known right-leaning commentators who have criticized the conflict against Iran, slamming his former allies as attention-seeking nut jobs. They are stupid people, they know it, their families know it, and everyone else knows it too, Trump wrote in nearly a 500-word post on True Social. In the president's crosshairs were Tucker Carlson and Megyn Kelly, two former Fox News hosts turned independent podcasters, as well as Candace Owens and Alex Jones, also podcasters and prominent conspiracy theorists. All four have vocally criticized Trump over the Iran conflict, slamming him for abandoning his anti-war campaign promises and, to varying degrees, accusing him of bowing to pressure from Israel to launch the conflict. Their criticism has highlighted a divide among the right over the conflict, a potential major political risk for the Republican Party heading into the November midterm elections. They do not have what it takes, and they never did. They've all been thrown off television, lost their shows, and are not even invited on TV because no one cares about them and they're nut jobs and troublemakers, and will say anything necessary for free and cheap publicity, the president wrote. Although all four have backed the president as Make America Great movement, several have previous feuds with the president. During Trump's first presidential campaign, Megyn Kelly, then a Fox News host, asked President Trump during a debate about disparaging remarks he had made against women. Then candidate Trump retorted with a joke about comedian Rosie O'Donnell, a longtime nemesis, and later prompted controversy by seeming to suggest that Kelly had asked the tough question because she was menstruating. You can see there was blood coming out of her eyes, blood coming out of her whatever, Trump said at the time. Now, President Trump referred to the saga Thursday, saying, "Megyn Kelly nastily asked me the now famous question." He also slammed Tucker Carlson for not obtaining a college degree, saying he hoped French First Lady Brigitte Macron wins her defamation suit against Candace Owens and that Alex Jones deserved to go bankrupt after calling the 2012 mass shooting at Sandy Hook Elementary School in Connecticut a hoax. Candace Owens has accused France's First Lady of being a man. Actually, to me, the First Lady of France is far more beautiful of a woman than Candace Owens. In fact, it's not even close, Trump wrote. These so-called pundits are losers, and they always will be, as reported by the Associated Foreign Press. From Kuwait. Iran and proxies attacked it despite the ceasefire. Kuwait has accused Iran and its proxies of launching drone attacks targeting it Thursday despite the two-week ceasefire in the Iran war, as Saudi Arabia said recent attacks damaged a key pipeline in the kingdom. The statement from Kuwait's foreign ministry, carried by the state-run Kuna News Agency, put new pressure on the ceasefire ahead of a planned talk Saturday between the United States and Iran in Islamabad, the capital of Pakistan. Kuwait's foreign ministry said the drone attacks targeted some vital Kuwaiti facilities Thursday night. Meanwhile, Saudi Arabia's state-run Saudi press agency, quoting an anonymous official, acknowledged a recent attack in the war that damaged its crucial east-west pipeline. That pipeline carries oil out to the Red Sea and avoids the Strait of Hormuz, which Iran maintains a chokehold on despite the pause in the fighting, as reported by the Associated Press. Root concedes that NATO has been a bit slow to help the United States with Iran. NATO's Secretary General Mark Root said yesterday, the alliance was a bit slow in supporting U.S. efforts against Iran, but added President Donald Trump was partly to blame for not informing allies ahead of time. Root addressed the Iran conflict during a speech at the Reagan Institute's Center for Peace Through Strength in Washington, D.C., a day after meeting privately with Trump at the White House. When it came time to provide the logistical and other support the United States needed in Iran, Some allies were a bit slow, Root said, according to a transcript of his speech. In fairness, they were also a bit surprised, he said. To maintain the element of surprise for the initial strikes, President Trump opted not to inform allies ahead of time. And I understand that, Root said. President Trump has rallied against NATO allies for not supporting the U.S. military in the conflict, which began February 28th in a joint operation with Israel targeting Tehran's political leadership and military infrastructure. He has expressed frustration that most allies refuse to join the U.S.-led bombing campaign or provide military assistance, accusing them of making a foolish mistake by failing to help secure the Strait of Hormuz after Iran moved to block the vital waterway, causing global energy prices to surge. He was particularly angered by Spain and France, which restricted or denied U.S. military use of their airspace and joint bases for Iran-related operations. On March 26, Trump referred to NATO as a paper tiger that did not want to join the fight to stop a nuclear-powered Iran. Root said the tide is shifting and that NATO allies are providing a massive amount of support now. What I see when I look across Europe today is allies providing a massive amount of support, Root said, basing, logistics, and other measures to ensure the powerful U.S. military succeeds in denying Iran a nuclear weapon and degrading its capacity to export chaos. Nearly without exception, allies are doing everything the United States is asking. They have heard and are responding to President Trump's requests. The United Kingdom is leading a coalition of countries that are aligning the military, the political, and the economic tools that will be required to ensure free passage through the Strait of Hormuz. This is evidence of a mindset shift. Following his Wednesday meeting with Root, President Trump rallied against NATO on Truth Social. NATO wasn't there when we needed them, and they won't be there if we need them again. Remember Greenland, that big, poorly run piece of ice. The president, myself, we like each other, Root told Rachel Hoff, the Reagan Institute's policy director, after his speech. We have been friends for many years now. I would rather have the conversation on the table instead of tiptoeing around it. I sensed his disappointment about the fact he felt that too many allies were not with him. I explained to him yesterday, hey, Mr. President, clearly the overwhelming majority of Europeans have done what you've asked of them and what was previously agreed in these circumstances. Yes, sometimes it takes a bit of time. Guess what? We have coalitions in Europe. We have sometimes the political home front to take care of. Sometimes it takes a couple of days, but we pull it together, and almost all of Europe did. For the United States to project power on the world stage through its partners in Europe, NATO is there, of course, to protect Europeans, but also to protect the United States. Both Starmer and President Trump are discussing opening the strait. British Prime Minister Keir Starmer spoke with President Donald Trump Thursday of this week about the need for a plan to restore shipping through the Strait of Hormuz as quickly as possible following a U.S. ceasefire with Iran, Downing Street said. Starmer discussed with President Trump the UK's efforts to convene partners to agree to a viable plan on restoring freedom of navigation in the waterway. They agreed that now there is a ceasefire in place and agreement to open the strait. We are at the next stage of finding a resolution, the statement said. The leaders have discussed the need for a practical plan to get shipping moving again as quickly as possible, Downing Street said, adding Trump and Starmer would speak again soon. As reported by Thomson Reuters, Acting Attorney General Blanche announces key changes at the Department of Justice. Acting Attorney General Todd Blanche Thursday moved swiftly to put his stamp on the Department of Justice, issuing a series of memos to staff on his first official day leading the agency. In a memo obtained by CNN, Blanche reaffirmed the department's focus on public safety and the administration's agenda, writing, "Our mission here at the department remains the same today as it was yesterday. President Trump has promised a safe America and will continue to deliver on that promise. Blanche also reportedly praised former Attorney General Pam Bondi, thanking her for her friendship, service, and selfless dedication to our department and country. In a separate memo to staff in the Deputy Attorney General's office, Blanche said he will move into the Attorney General's fifth floor office by next Monday. The acting Attorney General also announced key staffing moves, elevating allies to senior roles. In a Thursday afternoon post on X, Blanche said Trent McCotter will serve as Principal Associate Deputy Attorney General. He then added that Colin McDonald, currently Assistant Attorney General in the department's new Fraud Division, will continue assisting in the Deputy Attorney General's office while remaining in his current role. According to CNN, Bondi learned she was being removed from her post last Wednesday while riding in a car with President Donald Trump from the White House to the Supreme Court. Speaking at his first public press conference as head of the Justice Department Tuesday, Blanche highlighted the unusual transition, telling reporters, "No one has any idea why the Attorney General is no longer the Attorney General, and I am the acting Attorney General except for President Trump." According to Newsmax's Ed Henry, Trump's frustration that Bondi has not moved fast enough to pursue indictments against Democrats for what he has described as lawfare was a contributing factor to her removal. "Pam Bondi is a great American patriot and a loyal friend who faithfully served as my Attorney General over the past year. Pam did a tremendous job overseeing a massive crackdown in crime across our country, with murders plummeting to their lowest level since 1900, Trump said in a Truth Social statement. "We love Pam, and she will be transitioning to a much-needed and important new job in the private sector to be announced at a date in the near future. And our Deputy Attorney General and a very talented and respected legal mind, Todd Blanche, will step in to serve as Acting Attorney General," President Trump then concluded. The Trump administration moves to roll back coal ash rules. The Trump administration Thursday of this week proposed weakening rules for the disposal of ash produced by burning coal that can contain hazardous heavy metals and contaminate groundwater. Those regulations were strengthened under the Biden administration as part of a wider crackdown on pollution from coal-fired power plants. The Trump administration proposed easing standards for monitoring and protecting groundwater near some coal ash sites and rolling back rules that require the cleanup of entire coal properties rather than just the sites where ash was dumped. The revisions would also make it easier to reuse coal ash for other purposes. Environmental Protection Agency Administrator Lee Zeldin said the proposal reflects the agency's commitment to restoring American energy dominance, strengthening cooperative federalism, and accommodating unique circumstances at certain coal facilities. Burning coal produces tremendous amounts of ash, a waste product that contains heavy metals such as mercury, lead, and cobalt. If not stored properly, coal ash can contaminate groundwater. Coal plants are often situated on the banks of rivers or other waterways with waste ash sitting nearby. Opponents say the proposal, which grants states and other regulators the ability to grant exceptions from national standards, may open the door for companies to leave coal ash sitting in groundwater. The Biden-era EPA in 2022, for example, rebuffed the General James Gavin power plant in southern Ohio for trying to close a coal ash disposal site that the agency said was in contact with groundwater. In January of 2025, with Trump back in the White House, coal industry entities asked Zeldin to revise the agency's stance on the issue. Opening the door to leaving ash in groundwater undermines one of the central protections of this rule, and that is essentially what this does, said Nick Torrey, an attorney with the Southern Environmental Law Center, a nonprofit. The agency's proposals does state that an owner would be required to ensure that the ash poses no reasonable probability of adverse effects on human health and the environment. The Biden-era coal ash protections also required the cleanup of places like the Michigan City Generating Station in Indiana by Lake Michigan. Local activists are worried about the land created at the site, which is composed of part coal ash. The 2024 rules set deadlines for cleanup. At Michigan City and many other sites, standards to clean up the coal ash used to make land would be eliminated under the agency's proposal. The proposed rule also seeks to lift restrictions on the use of coal ash, called beneficial use by the EPA, and secondary materials such as cement and as structural fill. The agency also said the industry and others have said that the health risks from coal ash were overstated in previous EPA assessments. Federal officials said the estimated cost savings were more than enough to justify the proposed changes. The owners of Gavin Power Plant declined to comment. The owners of Michigan City Generating Station did not immediately comment. The Utility Solid Waste Activities Group appreciates EPA's efforts to address the significant challenges our members are facing in implementing the existing regulations, John Mavericht, executive director of the industry association, said in a statement. He then added that the group supports change that move away from the existing one-size-fits-all framework and incorporate site-specific flexibility, an approach that is common in other environmental programs. The EPA first set standards for coal ash during the Obama administration. They included requirements for companies to line new storage sites, monitor water, and close leaky ponds, often requiring the material to be moved elsewhere. In 2024, then-President Joe Biden's administration eliminated exemptions that had been granted to some older coal ash sites. The move is the latest in a series of Trump administration efforts to weaken clean air and water standards as part of regulatory relief for the fossil fuel industry. It is also in line with Republican President Donald Trump's efforts to boost U.S. coal and suppress cleaner alternatives, all the while declaring a national energy emergency. The coal industry has argued that a host of stringent rules that raise the cost of operating a coal plant prematurely push them into retirement. A coalition of coal and energy associations wrote last year, EPA's recent unprecedented expansion of the federal coal ash regulations has needlessly diverted funds from the power sector's efforts to meet the nation's growing energy needs, increased costs for power companies and consumers without corresponding benefits to public health or the government. Disasters first prompted the EPA to regulate coal ash. The agency started looking into the problem after a dike failed in Tennessee in 2008, spreading coal ash over 300 acres, or 120 hectares, and forcing a massive cleanup. Workers involved in that effort said the ash exposure caused cancer. In 2014, tens of thousands of tons spilled in North Carolina. The Trump administration just took the sledgehammer to the health protections in place for toxic coal pollution, said Lisa Evans, senior counsel at environmental group Earth Justice. This is yet another handout to the coal power industry at the expense of our health, water, and wallets. In other moves, the EPA earlier this year weakened limits on mercury and other toxic emissions from coal-fired power plants. The Trump administration has also halted the planned shutdown of several coal plants, citing the need for consistent power during major storms or periods of high demand, and arguing that without it, the grid would be less reliable. As reported by the Associated Press. A report says the Senate banking panel delays Warsh federal hearing. The Senate Banking Committee is no longer planning to hold a confirmation hearing for Kevin Warsh, President Donald Trump's pick to run the Federal Reserve next week, Punchbowl News has reported this week, citing two sources familiar with the planning. The committee did not immediately respond to a request for comment. President Trump nominated Warsh for the role on January 30th this year. The term of the current Fed chair, Jerome Powell, ends May 15th, as reported by Thomson Reuters. A U.S. judge says the Pentagon is in breach on reporter access. A federal judge Thursday of this week ruled that the Defense Department is violating his earlier order to restore access to the Pentagon for reporters. U.S. District Judge Paul Friedman said and cited with the New York Times earlier this month in deciding that the Pentagon's new credential policy violated journalists' constitutional rights to free speech and due process. He cited again with the Times in saying that the Pentagon had tried to evade his ruling by putting in new rules that expel all reporters from the building unless guided by escorts. The department simply cannot reinstate an unlawful policy under the guise of taking new action and expect the court to look the other way, Friedman wrote. Friedman had ordered Pentagon officials to reinstate the press credentials of seven New York Times reporters and stressed his decision applies to all regulated parties. The Pentagon building serves as a headquarters for U.S. military operations, as reported by the Associated Press. An official says the President Trump mulls pulling troops from Europe amid NATO strains. President Donald Trump upset at NATO allies' failure to help secure the Strait of Hormuz, and because plans to acquire Greenland have not moved forward, has discussed with advisors the option of removing some U.S. troops from Europe, a senior White House official told Reuters Thursday. No decision has been made, and the White House has not directed the Pentagon to draw up concrete plans for a troop reduction on the continent, said the official, who requested anonymity to discuss internal deliberations. But the discussions alone underscore how sharply relations between Washington and its European NATO allies have deteriorated in recent months. They also suggest that a visit to the White House on Wednesday by NATO Secretary General Mark Rutte failed to significantly improve transatlantic relations, which are arguably at their lowest point since NATO's 1949 founding. The U.S. currently has more than 80,000 troops in Europe and has played a central role in Europe's security architecture since World War II. More than 30,000 of those troops are located in Germany, with sizable numbers also stationed in Italy, the United Kingdom, and Spain. NATO did not immediately respond to a request for comment. The official did not say which countries could be affected or how many troops might ultimately be withdrawn if Trump decides to move forward with the idea. While Trump has long had a tumultuous relationship with NATO, for years accusing European capitals of skimping on defense spending, the last 3 months have been particularly rocky. In January, President Trump provoked a transatlantic crisis when he renewed longstanding threats to annex Greenland, an overseas territory of Denmark. Since the war with Iran broke out February 28th of this year, he has expressed deep frustration that NATO allies have not offered to help reopen the Strait of Hormuz, a vital route for global energy supplies that has remained largely closed despite a fragile ceasefire announced this week. NATO diplomats have said the U.S. had not made it clear if expected any mission in the Strait of Hormuz to start during or after the conflict, and they have also said the U.S. has not specified what particular capabilities it expected of each NATO country. The Wall Street Journal reported Wednesday of this week that senior administration officials were discussing moving troops stationed in Europe out of countries whose leaders had been critical of the U.S.-Israeli war in Iran and into European countries whose leaders had been more supportive. The White House official told Reuters that Trump was specifically discussing bringing troops back to the United States rather than moving them to different foreign countries, as reported by Thomson Reuters. Republicans block a bid to rein in President Trump's war powers. The House GOP Thursday of this week blocked a Democrat effort to end U.S. attacks on Iran as President Donald Trump's party continued to prevent efforts to rein in the president's war powers. Representative Chris Smith, a Republican from New Jersey, presided over an abbreviated pro forma House session, ending it before a group of Democrats could seek to pass the resolution via unanimous consent. Democrats in the Senate and House have tried and repeatedly failed in recent months to pass war powers resolutions to force Trump to obtain lawmakers' authorizations before launching military operations in both Venezuela and Iran. Trump's threat early this week that a whole civilization will die intensified concerns from Democrats, dozens of whom called for Trump's removal from office. The 1949 Geneva Conventions on Humanitarian Conduct in War prohibit attacks on sites considered essential for civilians. Threatening genocide is not a negotiating tactic, Representative Sarah Jacobs, a Democrat from California, told a news conference outside the Capitol after the pro forma session, held because Congress is out of Washington for the two-week Easter recess. Trump announced he had agreed to a ceasefire in the U.S.-Israeli war in Iran Tuesday, less than 2 hours before his deadline for Tehran to reopen the blockaded Strait of Hormuz or face devastating attacks on its civilian infrastructure. The White House says Trump's actions are legal and within his rights as commander-in-chief to protect the U.S. by ordering limited military operations. Iran says its nuclear program is peaceful. The Trump administration has portrayed the war as a decisive victory. Although the top U.S. general said U.S. troops stood ready to resume fighting, Trump's fellow Republicans hold slim majorities in both the Senate and the House and have almost unanimously backed all of his policies. Although the U.S. Constitution says that Congress, not the president, can declare war, the restriction does not apply for short-term operations or if the country faces an immediate threat, as reported by Thomson Reuters. Abortion opponents want Trump's FDA to act on the abortion pill restrictions. U.S. abortion opponents are increasingly frustrated with the lack of action by President Donald Trump's administration to stem the flow of abortion pills prescribed online that they view as undermining state abortion bans. A court ruling this week in a lawsuit that Louisiana Attorney General brought against Trump's Food and Drug Administration cast a spotlight on the simmering tension. The judge said the state has a strong case while declining to block telehealth prescriptions to the pill mifepristone for now. Anti-abortion groups are pushing the FDA to move faster with a review that they hope will result in restrictions on the abortion pill, including blocking its prescribing via telehealth platforms. The administration says this work takes time. The groups have focused mostly on the health agency and not the Republican president, whose three U.S. Supreme Court appointees were instrumental in the 2022 ruling that overturned Roe versus Wade and allowed the state bans in the first place. But the administration requests in the Louisiana lawsuit and similar ones elsewhere to delay rulings until it finishes a review have sparked anger for some activists. The stall tactics are beyond frustrating, Christy Hamrick, a spokesperson for Student for Life of America, said in an interview. Hamrick said the administration could also block the pills from being mailed by changing its interpretation of the 19th century law enforcing it. U.S. District Judge David Joseph, who was nominated to the bench by Trump, gave a mixed ruling Tuesday of this week in a case brought by Louisiana Attorney General Liz Murrell and a woman who says her boyfriend coerced her into taking mifepristone to end a pregnancy. Their overall aim is to roll back FDA rules that have made the pills more accessible. Murrell, like officials in other states that have filed similar lawsuits, contends that the availability of the pills via online providers takes the teeth out of the bans in the 13 states that bar abortion at all stages of pregnancy with limited exceptions. Surveys of abortion providers have suggested that its availability through telehealth is a reason the number of abortions in the U.S. has not dropped since the overturn of Roe versus Wade. While state abortion bans include prohibitions on abortion using the pills, some Democrat-controlled states have adopted laws that seek to protect medical providers who prescribe them over telehealth and mail the pills to state with bans. Those so-called shield laws are being tested through civil and criminal cases. In the Louisiana case, Joseph declined to grant Murrell's request to block telehealth prescriptions to the pills while the case moves through the courts. But he said he could do that eventually, and the plaintiffs in the case are likely to succeed on the merits of their arguments because the state has demonstrated it suffered irreparable harm. He also ordered the FDA to report to him within 6 months on the status of its review of the drug. Representative Gill says, focus on the Epstein victims, not politics. Representative Brandon Gill, a Republican from Texas, said Thursday, the Jeffrey Epstein case should remain focused on supporting victims. Meanwhile, the congressman defended President Donald Trump against what he described as politically motivated attacks. In comments addressing recent remarks by First Lady Melania Trump, Gill said he welcomed her emphasis on victims of sexual abuse. Anything we can do to help the victims is something that we should focus on, Gill said, adding he applauds the First Lady for standing up for victims. Melania Trump has recently drawn attention for comments highlighting the need to support survivors of abuse amid renewed public discussion of Epstein, the financier who died in federal custody in 2019 while awaiting trial on sex trafficking charges. On Thursday of this week, she denied ties to Epstein and knowledge of his sex crimes, saying that the stories are completely false and calling accusations that she was somehow involved in smears about her. Reading a statement at the White House yesterday, Thursday, First Lady Melania Trump said she and her attorneys were fighting back against unfounded and baseless lies regarding her connections to Epstein, a convicted sex offender who leveraged connections to the rich and powerful to recruit his victims and conceal his crimes. Gill also pushed back on criticism tied to President Trump's past comments, referencing the Epstein case as a hoax. He said those remarks were not meant to dismiss the seriousness of the allegations, but rather to criticize political opponents. When the president was talking about this being a hoax, what he was referring to is the fact that Democrats have weaponized the entire process against the president, Gill said. That is wrong. Gill argued that allegations connected to Epstein have been used unfairly in political attacks, calling it inappropriate to link Trump to conduct he said the president had nothing to do with. It is wrong to weaponize grotesque sexual assault against a man who had nothing to do with any of this, Gill said. The lawmaker noted that congressional and federal investigations into Epstein and related matters continue. He said the House Oversight Committee, on which he serves, has been conducting multiple inquiries alongside work by the Department of Justice. We have been doing multiple investigations on the White House Oversight Committee, and the DOJ has been working on this as well, Gill said. Epstein's case continues to generate political and public scrutiny, particularly regarding his network of associates and the handling of investigations before his death. Lawmakers from both parties have called for transparency and accountability, though disagreements remain over the scope and the direction of inquiries. Labor Secretary says there is a free AI course offered. Labor Secretary Lori Chavez de Remer said Thursday of this week that the Trump administration is pushing to make workers proficient and literate in AI through a federal initiative. She described the push an easy entry point for Americans worried about how artificial intelligence could reshape the job market. Chavez de Remer said the Department of Labor is trying to counter what she called exaggerated warnings about mass job losses while preparing workers for changes already underway across the country. AI is here to stay, and we are leaning into that, she said. She also said the department wants to make sure it is collecting the data points that are correct so that we can be transparent with the American people as businesses adopt AI tools. The centerpiece of that effort is the department's new Make America AI Ready program, with the Labor Department formally launched March 24th of this year as a free week-long AI literacy course delivered entirely by text message. And what we want is a workforce who is proficient and literate in AI, Chavez de Remer said. And so we are adopting all sorts of initiatives, one of those being Make America AI Ready, where, you know, for a beginner, somebody who's not been really introduced to AI, it's something that they can do right from their phone, she said. They can text 2022 and take us a short 7-day course and start to dive into that because we want to win the AI race. The Labor Department says the program is meant as a starter course for workers with little or no AI experience and is based on the agency's AI literacy framework released in February. According to the department, the course takes about 10 minutes a day for 7 days and covers 5 core areas: understanding AI principles, exploring AI uses, directing AI effectively, evaluating AI outputs, and using AI responsibly. The agency's website says that workers can enroll by texting the word READY to 20202 and that no laptop, app, or Wi-Fi is required. Chavez de Remer said the course is already live and accessible immediately. Absolutely. As a matter of fact, I started it last week, she said, when asked whether the 20202 sign-up was up and running. You just text it and it comes back immediately and you can take it, ask, and it will ask you questions. You can do it right from your phone, right in the office, right from home at any point during the day, she said. It's exciting news for learners. She framed the initiative as part of a broader administration effort to align workforce policy with private sector demand, saying some of the jobs being created will be tied to AI and that workers need training to fill them. So the private sector, 600,000 jobs that have been created, some of those will be AI, and we're going to train that workforce, she said. The comments come less than a week after the Bureau of Labor Statistics reported that U.S. employers added 178,000 jobs in March, while the unemployment rate held nearly steady at 4.3%, with gains led by healthcare, construction, and transportation and warehousing. Chavez de Remer said those figures show the administration is concentrating on private sector growth as federal employment declines. The Florida Attorney General says state is proactive against Sharia. Florida Attorney General James Utmeyer said Wednesday of this week that he is proud of a new state law that he said is aimed at preventing Sharia, Islamic law, from being applied in Florida. As always, Florida leads the way, Utmeyer, a Republican, said this week. The governor signed this week a bill that makes sure we are never going to operate under the authority of Sharia law here in Florida, not in our courts, not in our local governments, not controlling contracts or in our schools. Utmeyer said it's an upfront way to deal with a serious issue. It is important here for us to always be proactive to recognize that we do have a surge of Muslims in this country that are pushing Sharia law, trying to influence our kids and trying to educate and undermining our Republican ideals, trying to attack Western civilization. He said that level of influence cannot be allowed to take hold. This is wrong, and we're going to keep fighting it. Governor Ron DeSantis signed a measure into law Monday that gives him and other Florida leaders the ability to label groups as domestic or foreign terrorist organizations and expel state university students who support them. Once designated as a terrorist organization, a group can be dissolved and it can no longer receive state funding through school districts or state agencies. Universities also would have to report the status of expelled students attending on visas to U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement. DeSantis on Monday of this week posted on X about the law, sharing a graphic titled Banning Sharia Law, outlining some of the measure's provisions. To uphold the rule of law, our state must operate under one legal system. The Constitution must remain the law of the land, and we must defend our institutions from those who would harm us, especially terrorist organizations that seek to infiltrate and subvert our education system, DeSantis wrote. Utmeyer said that with Florida now supporting school choice programs, safeguards are needed to prevent improper use of state education funding. It's working out very well for students, but we don't want those funds going to Muslim schools. That might be teaching Sharia law in the classroom, he said. This is a danger to our republic, Utmeyer said. It's a danger to our students. We're going to investigate, and where the state identifies that nonprofit groups and schools might be tied to terrorist organizations, we're going to shut down their opportunity to get many privileges here in the state of Florida, as reported by the Associated Press. Artemis 2 nears splashdown. Their dramatic grand finale fast approaching. Artemis 2's astronauts aim for a splashdown in the Pacific Ocean later today, Friday, to close out humanity's first voyage to the moon in more than a half century. The tension in Mission Control mounted as the miles melted away between the four returning astronauts and Earth. All eyes were on the capsule's life-protecting heat shield that has to withstand thousands of degrees during re-entry. On the only other test flight of the spacecraft in 2022, With no one on board, the shield's charred exterior came back looking as pockmarked as the moon. Commander Reed Weissman, pilot Victor Glover, Christina Koch, and Canada's Jeremy Hansen were on track to hit the atmosphere traveling at Mach 32, or 32 times the speed of sound, a blistering blur not seen since NASA's Apollo moonshots of the 1960s and 70s. They did not plan on taking manual control except in an emergency. Their Orion capsule, dubbed Integrity, is completely self-flying. Like so many others, lead flight director Jeff Radigan anticipated feeling some of that irrational fear that is human nature, especially during the 6 minutes of communication blackout preceding the opening of the parachutes. The recovery ship USS John P. Murtha awaited the crew's arrival along with a squadron of military planes and helicopters. The last time NASA and the War Department teamed up for a lunar cruise reentry was Apollo 17 in 1972. Artemis II was projected to come screaming back at 34,965 feet per second. That's also 23,840 miles an hour. Not a record, but still mind-bogglingly fast. Before then slowing to a 19-mile-per-hour splashdown. Launched from Florida April 1st, the astronauts racked up one win after another as they deftly navigated NASA's long-awaited lunar comeback, the first major step in establishing a sustainable moon base. Artemis II did not land on the moon or even orbit it, but it broke Apollo 13's distance record, making Weissman and his crew the farthest that humans have ever journeyed from Earth when they reached 252,756 miles. Then, in the mission's most heart-tugging scene, the teary astronauts asked permission to name a pair of craters after their moonship and Weissman's late wife, Carol. During the record-breaking flyby, they documented scenes of the lunar far side never seen before by the naked eye and savored a total solar eclipse courtesy of the cosmos, thanks to their launch date. The eclipse in particular just blew all of us away, Glover said. The Artemis II crew's allegiance was to those next to Artemis crews, Weissman said. Under the revamped Artemis program, next year's Artemis 3 will see astronauts practice docking their capsule with a lunar lander or two in orbit around Earth. Artemis 4 will attempt to land a crew of two near the moon's south pole in 2028. We really hope in our soul is that we could, for just a moment, have the world pause and remember that this is a beautiful planet and a very special place in our universe, and we should all cherish what we have been gifted. The crew will land later tonight, as reported by the Associated Press. That's all the time we have today. Thank you for listening to Talking Information Center News. We hope that you will look for us, like us, and share us on social media, on Facebook, Instagram, and X. Thank you for listening. This has been Newsmax with Michelle Balcony on Friday, April 10th, 2026. Make it a great day.